Ryan, once again, Home Field Apparel is making Gopher Gridiron Radio possible because they sponsor us. And Ryan, it's that time of the year again. The holidays are around the corner, and let me tell you something that would be great in a stocking stuffer or maybe just a Christmas gift in general is a hat from Home Field Apparel.
And they just released a brand new Goldie Trucker hat.
Yes.
It looks, as the kids would say, it looks pretty fire. So whether you're looking for, because somehow, Lou, Christmas is just about a month out.
Hold on. They have a ton of hats, though, Ryan. They have a hat for like every person. They've got the vintage dad hat, right? They've got like the classic hat. They've kind of got the throwback corduroy hat and now this trucker hat. Like literally they have a hat for everyone.
They've even got the two-tone dad hat with the old Goldie.
Yeah. Which one are you, Ryan? Are you the trucker hat? I'm probably the dad hat because I'm the dad in the group.
I can tell you by looking at that dad hat, I have a gigantic head. That
thing would look
like if you went to a baseball game and you got the ice cream and like the mini helmet. That's what it would look like on top of my head. My only shot here is this new trucker hat, the new Goldie one. So what we want you to do, it's almost somehow a month out from Christmas, which I'm not emotionally ready for that, but when you start to think about gifts for your favorite Gopher fan in your life, go to Home Field Apparel. I can guarantee you're going to find something that you know that they'll like. And when you get to checkout, use promo code GG24 to get 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG24 at checkout for 15% off your first order.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back from the second bye week as your Golden Gopher squad, stop me if this is sounding familiar, Luke, is facing the number four team in the country this weekend at home in November as the Penn State Nittany Lions come to town as the number four team in the country. I seemingly remember a game 5 years ago that reinvigorated a large chunk of, I think, the casual fan base. Can the iron strike hot twice, Mr. Luke Buer, is everything we get to discuss tonight?
Yeah, you know, there are some notable differences between these two different games that you're alluding to there. One, the Gophers aren't ranked. Number two, Penn State is, you know, playing for their college football playoff lives. Maybe they can drop this one, but I think they pretty much have to win out. It's just a whole new paradigm, right? It's going to be a great game. It'll be the last home game. Fittingly, Ryan, it is going to be cold. It is November, so it should be cold. But we have to celebrate what was maybe the best weather season for home field games for Gopher football in my lifetime.
It was one that I don't think people are going to be able to appreciate until it's over. I believe there was only one 11 a.m. game, and that was the Rhode Island one. But you had night games against North Carolina, USC, Iowa. You had afternoon games like Maryland, this one coming up here this weekend, the Nevada game. Only one 11 a.m. game all season long is incredible.
Yeah, and the weather was just wonderful. Like, it was oddly warm at times. Like, it looked like that North Carolina game was going to be just, you know, wet, and it ended up being not bad at all. It was just all in all wonderful. And, you know, you stacked a bunch of home games early, and now you're going to close out late with a very fitting November game. And you know what? It's going to be some classic Big Ten football. I guess it's not as classic, like OG classic, because Penn State isn't one of the OG 10, but it's about as classic as it gets in this new era.
Yeah, and even with the weather this weekend, I'm going to sound like a true Minnesotan when I say it, so I'll break out the accent and everything. But Luke, did you know it's not the cold that gets you? It's the wind.
It's the wind.
So, yeah, it's going to be 35 degrees there this weekend, but there's going to be very little wind. So it's going to feel like it's in the 30s, but it's not going to be like that final game of the season. What was it, 2 years ago? Wisconsin came to town, and it was just unfathomably cold.
Yeah,
because of how windy it was. So 35 degrees, cloudy, but at least there's no wind to speak of for this game this weekend.
All right. So, you know, in November, no one is healthy, Ryan. The Gophers are fortunately coming off of a bye. So maybe they might be feeling a little better than you would in a normal November game. But yeah, what are some injuries that we're going to be looking out for both Minnesota and Penn State in this game?
Yeah, let's start with the Minnesota side of the ball. And that's where, to your point, there have been a lot of guys playing through a lot of things. Tis the season. You've got two games left. No one's at 100% anymore. I think the clear winners out of the bye week in theory would be a guy like Darius Taylor, who gets 31 touches in that Illinois game, leaves the field three different times, playing through bumps and bruises, and then he clearly was not anywhere close to 100% for that Rutgers game. And I think you saw it felt in the run game, where Minnesota ball carriers only forced one missed tackle all game against Rutgers, which is not where you want to be. So in theory, he gets the bye week to rest up and prepare. I would say I've heard that through the grapevine that Darius has done much more at practice this week than he did leading into that Rutgers game, which is obviously good news. You look at on the defensive side of the ball. Well, I should say I do expect Tyler Cooper to return. Minnesota's starting left guard has missed the last two games in the concussion protocol. He traveled for the Rutgers game, which was a really good indication that he was progressing, did not travel for that Illinois game. But I've heard that he would practice during the bye. Things went well. Sounds like they're going to get their starting left guard back, which if that is the case, my guess as to what you see is you have Ariante Irisarie at left tackle, Tyler Cooper at left guard, Greg Johnson at center. Quinn Carroll stays at right guard, essentially replacing Ashton Beers there. And then they let Philip Daniels get his third start at right tackle. That would be my guess for what happens. Defensively, Ja Joyner clearly banged up. Jalen Logan Redding, Devin Eastern, all of them playing through something. They're going to be as healthy as they can be coming off that. And then I do not expect to see Aiden Goosby in this game. I think he's going to be out, from what I've been told, for the rest of the regular season. The hope would be you get him back for the bowl game in about 6 weeks' time. So what does that mean? That means Kerry Brown likely slides over to strong safety, and that inserts Coy Parrish into the starting lineup. Now, I know there's a lot of angst about how many snaps is the boy wonder playing. Now, I understand it. He leads the Big Ten in interceptions, but, I mean, we're still talking about a guy who has played 40 or more snaps in four of the last five games. He's going to likely surpass that in this one. So you're going to be losing one of your surest tacklers at that strong safety position. But the nice part is that's the nice thing about having a trio of Goosby, Brown, and Parrish is you can just slide in Kerry Brown over to strong, gets an entire week to likely practice there. And then the boy wonder from Esco gets to get into the starting lineup. Now, on the Penn State side of things, there's a little bit less known. I will say this. Penn State media was at practice on Wednesday, and the two players I want to note that would be of significant value, in my opinion, one on the offensive side of the ball, Julian Fleming, is a receiver for them, plays a lot of snaps, transferred in from Ohio State. He was not at practice on Wednesday while the media was there. So I think that is certainly worth noting. We'll see if he's able to play in this game. And then their second best pass rusher, Danny Dennis Sutton, barely did much in terms of work. He's coming off an injury as well. That would be two significant-ish injuries, certainly for me. I think 33, that Dennis Sutton player, their edge, I think he ends up playing. But the Fleming one is one I'm certainly going to keep an eye on all the way until kickoff.
All right. So obviously injuries always play a big part in November. And we often talk about with former Golden Gopher Derek Burns, November really kind of cements your season, right? You really make your hay in November. So for the Gophers currently sitting at 6-4, they have an opportunity with a win this week, obviously, to kind of cement their season by finding a way to win one of these last two games, or if they're able to, both could really solidify this as a great season, right? So let's talk about when the Gophers are on offense, and we'll go through some stats, some counting stats here real quickly, Ryan. On the season, the Gophers are averaging 26.7 points per game on offense. Conversely, Penn State is giving up 13.6 points per game. If you're curious, that's a very low number. That is ranked second in the Big Ten. For total offense, the Gophers are averaging 333 yards of total offense. Conversely, Penn State is giving up 272 yards of total offense. For rush offense, the Gophers are averaging 104 yards through the air. Conversely, Penn State is giving up 98.8 yards per game. And then for passing offense, the Gophers are averaging 228 yards per game. And conversely, Penn State is giving up 174. I think it's really safe to say, Ryan, that this is going to be one of the best, if not the best, defense that the Gophers will face all season. They statistically are incredibly high in their defensive rankings in the Big Ten, just on counting stats alone. I mean, we could get to even some, you know, advanced analytics that we get from like College Football Insiders. I mean, you just look at their like defensive success rate, their top 20 and absolutely everything. They're just really good. And so how is this Gopher offense going to find success against this very good Penn State defense?
Yeah, I think this is without question the top defense that Minnesota's played all season. And I mean that with no disrespect to Iowa or Michigan, but the way that they are executing on all three levels right now, it's a very difficult defense, I would say, to go against. Plus, they have what is likely going to be the highest draft pick that Minnesota faces, at least offensively, against them, and Abdul Carter, who is number 11. He is not the biggest guy in the world, but he is going to be someone off the edge that is going to give Minnesota fits. He is incredibly, incredibly twitched up. He's got a great get off. He can run really, really quickly for 5 yards and turn a quarter. I mean, he leads their team in total pressures and hurries. He's one of the top players in the country. But then you get, to me, where this separates from, say, a Michigan, where Michigan has Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant, two of the best defensive tackles. I think I've seen mock drafts from NFL insiders where they both go in the first round, those Michigan defensive tackles. Where I think Penn State separates themselves is at linebacker and in the secondary. I just think they are so gifted all the way around. They're executing at a very high level. And where you're going to hear me talk a lot about it on this episode, third down is going to, in my opinion, play out the story of this game. And so what do I mean by that? I mean, Minnesota's offense has to get away from third and long. It's one of the things that offensive coordinator Greg Harbaugh talked about today, is that Minnesota broke down every third and seven plus from Penn State. And Luke, in the first 25 of those that Penn State faced this season, they had more takeaways than third down conversions allowed. Okay. He then goes into detail and says Penn State has faced 73 separate third and seven pluses, which is insane, considering I think they've only faced around 100 third downs all season. So the fact that somewhere around 70% of them are third and longs tells you how good they are in early downs. But of those 73 third and seven pluses, they've only allowed 11 conversions. I mean, that's like a 14, 15% rate. So where can Minnesota not be third and long? And that's one of Harbaugh is also right when he said this. Why was Minnesota able to pull the upset at the time against USC? Well, they barely were in third down all day because they were so good on early downs. And so that's where I would love to tell you, Luke, that the law of Minnesota's offensive line this year, where they played well against Illinois and then they did not play well against Rutgers. Well, if you continue to follow the pattern off the bye week, they should play well against Penn State. So if Minnesota's offensive line comes to play with Tyler Cooper likely entering the starting lineup again, and Minnesota can run the ball sort of, which I'm not expecting the world here. I will remind you, if you kind of zoned out during Luke's stats to know there, this is one of the best run defenses in the country, in the Big Ten. They've only allowed 2 rushing touchdowns all year. They're allowing under 3.5 yards per carry. The place you want to be is third and four, third, anywhere between third and one to third and four. That's where you want to be. So if I'm Harbaugh, I've had the extra week to prepare. You've got to be able to protect Brosmer. And if that's going to be the case, you can't be allowing these Penn State pass rushers, an 11 and 33, to just pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. But to do so, third down is going to be so, so big for Minnesota's offense.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, Penn State is incredibly good defensively, especially on early downs, but also in third down situations, in part because they're able to get them to get their opponent into third and longs. It's also probably important to know that they lead the conference. And let me make sure I get this right. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they lead the conference in tackles for loss.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so they're really good. Like, they allowed Ohio State's offense to score 20 points. And Ohio State's offense is clearly more high-powered than Minnesota's. They're only allowing Penn State's defense 13.6 points per game in conference play. I mean, they're coming in off a heat or two where I think the last couple of games against Washington and Purdue, the opponent didn't even get to double-digit points. So you've had the bye week to prepare. I'm going to reveal a secret now. My key to the game for the offense, find a way to 20 points.
Yeah.
And a lot of you listening thinking, Ryan, only 20? Like, oh boy, another excuse for Harbaugh's offense. Here we go. Ohio State only scored 20.
And
Ohio State. And if you can match what the Buckeyes do offensively against this defense,
yeah,
I think you're in a pretty good spot, Luke.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Ohio State has been on a heater. I know that they do have a loss on the season. I am interested to see, you know, how the Gophers can stack up. But yeah, I hear you that 20 really is probably a mark that, man, if you can get above 20, like, you've had a good day.
Again, I'm looking at like their last few games here. They allowed 10 points to Purdue, 6 to Washington, 20 to Ohio State, 13 to Wisconsin. It got weird out at the Coliseum, which that's what happens when you force turnovers, which we'll get to that defensively. But UCLA scored only 11, and that last touchdown for them came with like 10 seconds left. Illinois only scored 7. It's really difficult to score points against Penn State. And that's maybe the biggest difference between 2019 in 2024, is I think Minnesota certainly isn't as high powered as they were in 19 with Bateman, Tyler Johnson, Rodney Smith, multiple guys on the offensive line that ended up being draft picks. Now, you still have the best left tackle of my lifetime, probably in a Gopher uniform, and Ariante Ursery, who accepted a Senior Bowl invitation this week, which is going to be a great opportunity for him to solidify his stock in the top 40 overall draft picks. But it's, you're going to have to be able to hit, Luke. You're going to have to be able to hit on essentially everything. The margin for error in this game for Minnesota's offense is razor thin. So when you do get opportunities for explosives, you have to take advantage.
Team Dinkytown Real Estate brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, I know that recruiting season is going to be picking up here soon, and there are going to be a number of new guys signing with the University of Minnesota. And let's just have a message to those parents that might be looking to buy a place around here, like some of the other football parents or athletes. Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group can help you. And guess what? A portion of that commission that would normally go to the real estate agent is going to go to Dinkytown Athletes to support your son or daughter in whatever sport they play. It's just a win-win, Ryan.
What a personalized ad. It's almost like one of our listeners, a player parent, has actually taken us up on that advice, and they were very happy with the results. So if you are a player parent, or if you are just a giant Gopher fan and you want to try to get into the real estate game, whether it's buying or selling a home and you don't know what you're doing, you're looking for a real estate agent, go to teamdinkytown.com, peruse around there, and then when you're ready, give them a call at 612-250-8562.
The Burns Insurance Agency has helped make Gopher Gridiron Radio possible for a number of years, and now it is open enrollment season. You know what? Maybe you should open enroll your home or your auto insurance. I think that's where the Burns Insurance Agency can help you, because they're going to do a lot of the work for you.
They will, and that's the beauty of an independent insurance agent. They're not going to just go with whatever their company is. They're going to put you up against 20 different companies to get you the best coverage at the best price. And if you're thinking to yourself, who actually does this? I'm telling you, I was out on Oak Street before a game just about a month ago. I had somebody come up to me and say, hey, I switched over to your father. He saved me $700 with his home and auto. So if you're thinking to yourself, do these guys actually save me money? Yes. Austin is just like you, me, and everybody else. He's just one of us. So what I want you to do, shoot him an email today, bill@insurancebyburns.com, or check them out online, insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk about when the Gopher defense is on the field. Ryan, let's get to some counting stats again. On the season, Penn State is averaging 33 points per game. That ranks fourth in the Big Ten. Minnesota is averaging, giving up 17.7. That ranks fifth in the Big Ten. In terms of total offense and defense, Penn State is averaging 454 yards of total offense. The Gophers are averaging, giving up 296 yards of total offense. As it comes to rushing per game, let me make sure I get this right. Yes, this number is correct. 200 yards per game, Ryan. The Gophers are averaging, giving up 119. And then through the air, 254 yards of total offense. The Gophers are giving up 176. Ryan, this is a Penn State offense that doesn't turn the ball over a ton. Most of
and
their
they
quarterback
score a lot of points.
Yeah. they're good in that respect. Their turnover margin is +3, where they have 12 takeaways and 9 giveaways. And they're, you know, Drew Aller only has 5 interceptions on the season. I do hope that the Gophers take a very aggressive approach. I recognize you might give up explosive plays, but you're going to need takeaways if you're going to have a chance in this game.
If Andy Kotelicki, Litchfield, Minnesota native, does not win the Broyles Award, or is at least not a finalist for it, something went terribly, terribly wrong amongst media members this year. Because what the first-year offensive coordinator has done is sensational, considering the weapons that they have. Now, they have what is likely going to be the Mackey Award winner, which goes to the nation's top tight end, Tyler Warren, on their roster, which certainly helps. But I am not a fan of their receivers. And Drew Aller, I think, has taken a step forward from what he's been. But it is their offensive coordinator. As I said, Litchfield, Minnesota native, Andy Kotelicki, who has really put a jolt into them. Because depending upon if you look at one of our two favorite websites for advanced football stats, GameOnPaper.com or CollegeFootballInsiders.com. I mean, Luke, we're talking about Game on Paper has Penn State as the number one offense in college football and offensive success rate. Is that good? Yes, it's bleeping elite. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to look at College Football Insiders, they have them third in all of college football and success rate as an offense. I mean, they are absolutely humming. And where I think this game's going to come down to, as I've mentioned previously, might be third down, where Penn State is among the best offenses in college football on third down. Why is that, Luke? Well, I'm so glad you asked. Because they're always in third and short. Always. Every single time. They rank fourth in the country in third down distance to go on third down. Like, they are always in third and short. Like, they're never off track, as Corey Heatherman would say, Minnesota's defensive coordinator. So, it's going to be a tough task, because not only is it going against Kotelicki, which we'll get into a little bit later, but Tyler Warren, number 44, I mentioned him earlier, he is sensational. He's their tight end, of which he will line up as a wildcat quarterback. Oh, by the way, he's run for over 100 yards in his last three games. In terms of combined, he's got, I think, 4 rushing touchdowns. He's top 6 in the Big Ten in receptions, receiving yards. He'll be lined out wide. He'll be flexed into the slot. He'll be an attached Y tight end. You'll see him do some 2 quarterback stuff. I mean, they do everything with him. And that's one of the things that stood out to me about what Corey Heatherman said today, Luke, is he said the Gopher defensive staff went back and watched all the Penn State games. Can you guess how many different personnel groupings Penn State has played so far this season?
I think I saw your tweet, but I think it was something absurd, like 23 or something.
They have 20 different personnel groupings. Yeah. 20. Like, you have to know where guys are at all times, because that's what makes Kotelicki so good, is they might not be the most talented, at least skill position-wise, Penn State team that we've ever seen. I mean, again, I cannot stress to you how impressed I think I am by Tyler Warren, but like their two backs, Nicholas Singleton and Katron Allen, they're really good. I just don't think that they're incredibly gifted at receiver, which happens after four receivers transfer out in the offseason to power four programs, including Luke. Did you know we have a revenge game?
Yeah, the Driver kid, right? He came from
Christian Driver revenge game on the line. Do you think we're going to be able to see Greg Harbaugh dial up a deep shot for Christian Driver to try and get his deep speed onto the field? He hasn't played much here of late, but the Christian Driver revenge game, if he catches a touchdown, and I don't see you guys on Twitter or Blue Sky or wherever you are now, I'm going to be disappointed in you. This is also me saying, Brevin Spanford, my boy, everybody made fun. He had like four first down receptions on Monday Night Football for the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm getting sidetracked. You had to get that in just there. No, it'd be Christian.
Well, everybody tells me I'm wrong, and I usually am. So yeah. I can have the opportunity to pat myself on the back a little bit, I'll take just hurt my shoulder.
All right. The Christian Driver. I was wondering if you were going to fit in a narrative street angle there. I appreciate that you found it. Yeah.
You know, the funny part is I've been talking to some people. There's some extra time during the bye week for me and my Gopher sources to communicate. They're well aware. I had multiple people reference Narrative Street. So it's infiltrated the buildings in Dinkytown. I mean, they find a little bit of humor in it. But Luke, just so you know, they like to take the stroll just like I do. So you know what? If they can take the stroll, I can scuttle my way down the street as well.
All right.
The state's offense, I will just say, my biggest hesitation here is it's going to be 35 degrees. Minnesota has struggled to stop the run at times this year, including against Rutgers, where even without your boy, Kyle Manungai, Minnesota missed, I believe, 15 tackles. They allowed Rutgers number three and number four tailbacks to force double-digit missed tackles. And that's where Katron Allen and Nick Singleton, they're really good. They're really gifted athletically. And if they can just be in third and short all day, that gives me a lot of hesitation. But the biggest thing I'm watching is we're coming off a game in which Kirk Shiraka out-schemed Corey Heatherman in the first half, and Minnesota didn't get the adjustments in until halftime. Well, guess what? Let me stay there for a second, Luke, because we did finally get to talk to Heatherman on Wednesday. And we're able to finally talk to him about the Rutgers game in the first half. Because if you remember 10 days ago, you, myself, and Derek were kind of like, what the heck was that first half? Like, what was Heatherman doing? Yeah. And that's when Heatherman came out and said, Shiraka did multiple things that they had not done all season long, including going to 10 personnel, which there was not a single snap of tape of Rutgers apparently doing that. They did some other things that Minnesota wasn't exactly expecting. Well, guess what? I can assure you Kotelicki has watched that Minnesota might be slow to adjust early in games. And the one thing that absolutely without question cannot happen if your Golden Gophers are going to be able to have you storming the field about 5:55 Central on Saturday night, they cannot get off to a slow start. If you allow Penn State to score touchdowns on their first two drives, you're just asking for disaster for Harbaugh's offense that has to go against some of the best pass rushers in the country. So Minnesota has to have a fast start. It's a lot easier said than done against an offense that has put up 49 points, 35, against non-Ohio State teams, 28, 33. Like, they have been very efficient. I don't know that they're the most gifted. I don't know that it's the best offensive line. But Kotelicki, Drew Aller, and Tyler Warren have been a very lethal trio so far this season.
All right. So can we get to some facts and figures, and then we will get to your keys to the game?
I suppose.
All right. So this game will be played on November 23rd at 2:30 p.m. For those watching on television, it will be on CBS with Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson, and Jenny Dell. Obviously, this will be played at Huntington Bank Stadium. The overall all-time series, Minnesota trails 6 wins to 10 losses. In Minnesota, though, the series is tied 4-4. Minnesota has lost the last meeting, 45-17. That took place, I believe that was a whiteout. I believe that was Ethan Kaliakmanis's first game, and that was in Happy Valley. They lost 45-17, as I said. James Franklin is in his 11th year at Penn State, which is just kind of crazy to think.
Two of the longest tenured coaches in the entire Big Ten.
You've got
James Franklin at number two, PJ Fleck at number three, and they might vault to 1 and 2 on the list, depending upon what happens with Kirk Ferentz here in a few weeks.
Oh, yeah, and then my conspiracy theory can come true. Minnesota comes in this game 6-4, 4-3 in the Big Ten. Penn State comes in 9-1, 6-1 in the Big Ten. Their only loss, I believe, was again to Ohio State, as we discussed earlier. In terms of the betting line, Ryan, currently what the odds I'm seeing on ESPN Bet, the spread is currently 12.5 with an over-under of 45. The 12.5 obviously in favor of Penn State. This opened at 11.5. We probably should take a quick review of our prediction stats before the season. Ryan, before the season, you predicted that Penn State would win this game 34-20. I predicted 41-20. Neither of us predicted this to
holy,
be.
Holy overs.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Neither of us picked this game to be a coin flip, but yes, holy overs on the early part of the season. And then just looking at the overall, I'll get back to that later. Looking at the weather, Ryan, Saturday does look to be chillier than every other home game so far this season. But it's right about average for, you know, mid late November, time. So for a 2:30 kick, we're looking at about a 36 degree kickoff temp. It'll probably hover and stay pretty solid there until the end of the game. It might dip down to 35. There shouldn't be much wind to speak of. As you mentioned, it probably is likely to be overcast, not a great chance for rain. So I don't think this will be rain. I think this is good. This is good old fashioned football weather, especially good old fashioned Big Ten football weather. Any other facts and figures that I might have missed that we should jump into before we get to your keys to the game?
I don't think so. Not that can't wait until the final predictions here.
Okay. I should probably mention, because it's only fair, if you do need to listen to this game, it will be available on KFAN with the regular crew of Mike Grimm, Daryl Thompson, Justin Gard. And then additionally, you can listen to it on Sirius XM channel 158 or 196. So, Ryan, what are your keys to this game if the Gophers are going to find a win?
Well, let's start on the offensive side of the ball. And I said it before, I'll say it again. They need to find a way to score 20 points as an offense. And I know some of you, like I said, are listening to that and saying, well, here we go. Ryan's making excuses for Harbaugh again. Okay, well, you look at this Penn State defense and tell me 20 points wouldn't be a win, because they're allowing 13 points per game in the Big Ten. They held Ohio State's offense to 20. And I say this with peace and love to all of you drinking your maroon and gold color Kool-Aid. Minnesota ain't the Buckeyes offensively. There really isn't a weakness when you dive into the weeds either, as they rank top 16 in the country. Penn State's defense does. And EPA per rush, EPA per dropback, they're outstanding on early downs. They're outstanding on third downs. I would just say, I understand that these games aren't played on paper, which if I have to hear one more time about that with this college football playoff nonsense that I've continued to hear, and maybe we can talk about in a little bit, there is a reason why this is not even a 2-touchdown game in terms of a spread. But if they're going to find a way to score 20 points, the number one thing that has to happen is the Gopher offensive line has to show up. They have been maddeningly inconsistent all year long. Last two games are a great example of that. Brian Callahan's unit helps Darius Taylor and Marcus Major rush for over 100 yards against the Illini. And then the next week, that same duo runs for 37 yards. Now, we're also coming off a quarter which left a sour taste in my mouth. I'll even admit, probably has me a little bit of recency bias as well, where the Gophers ran in the first 10 plays of the fourth quarter against Rutgers. They went for negative 10 yards with a turnover and a safety in there. Now, I've talked about it before. The stat in the advanced football circles called line yards. For those of you who need a refresher, line yards attempts to measure the number of rushing yards that are attributed to the offensive line. And that's where, if you look at the history here, in 2022, Minnesota was 3.49 offensive line yards per rush. That was seventh in college football. Last year, they dipped to 3.13, about average in college football, 68th in the FBS. And this year, through 10 games, they rank 113th in that same metric. So that's the lowest for any offensive line in the Fleck era. That's the lowest mark for any Gopher offensive line since 2010, which is not where you want to be. And it plays a large part in my mind of why they're the 17th ranked Big Ten rushing offense. Now, it isn't just them, because Minnesota ball carriers. Okay, Luke, you want to guess how many missed tackles Pro Football Focus has Minnesota ball carriers with in the last two games?
Well, I know there was one the game before, so I'm going to go Illinois, maybe three, so I'm going to go four.
Minnesota ball carriers, according to Pro Football Focus, have forced three, one, two, three missed tackles in the last two games, which I'll go back to. That Illinois game where Darius and Marcus Major rushed for over 150 yards, that tells me that was all of the offensive line in their mind. But when Darius is banged up and Marcus Major isn't making guys miss, that's not good. So you've got a bye week to prepare. Tyler Cooper returns to the starting lineup. They have to have one of their best games of the season, because as much as it is about the running attack, you've got to keep Brosmer upright. When you look back at that 2019 game, one of the things that stood out to me is how did Minnesota complete the upset, score 30-plus points? They had eight different explosive plays through the air. They had eight different completions of 20 or more yards. Some of you will remember this. I think it was 66 yards to Rashad Bateman to open the game. You had the Tyler Johnson one-handed catch. You had the Chris Ottman-Bell tunnel screen. They were explosive, and that's where your stars need to be stars. Daniel Jackson, Darius Taylor, Elijah Spencer have to have some of the best games of their career. Plus, Brosmer is going to have his best deep ball of the entire season. Now, I will also note, when Minnesota does get into the red zone, they've got to get touchdowns, not field goals. Field goals don't beat Penn State. But guess what? Nittany Lions have only allowed a touchdown on 37% of Big Ten opponents' red zone possessions. I mean, that's fantastic. It's one of the best in college football. So you want Harbaugh and Fleck to play as aggressively as they have all season, a.k.a. if there's a decision point on a 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2, you've got to play for it, because it's just the reality of this game. Now, getting off to a quick start would be divine, just to be able to hang in there, just to get the crowd, the senior day crowd, into it. But I'll say this, the offensive line has to do it. They got to come out aggressively. They have to limit their missed assignments. They have to limit the penalties. They have to give their tailbacks a resemblance or a semblance of a crease. So if the Minnesota moving company starts fast, that's going to be a great indicator for Minnesota to stay in this game. If they don't, it could get out of hand pretty quickly. Now, for the defense, you've got to make Andy Kotelicki's offense go 10-plus plays down the field again and again and again. I've talked about the hashtag one of us, Mr. Kotelicki, Litchfield, Minnesota native, the Penn State offensive coordinator. One of my picks, if I had a vote for the Broyles Award, would certainly be him. This Nittany Lion offense ranks top three in offensive success rate with a gaudy 50-plus number. I mean, Drew Aller, their quarterback, to me has been one of the stories of the season, because he's been incredibly efficient with the football. He's completing over 70% of his throws, only five interceptions all season, and a Big Ten low among all starting quarterbacks with four turnover-worthy plays. Now, Luke, I know I'm going to get this question, so I'm going to clarify it now. Ryan, how can he have five interceptions but only four turnover-worthy plays? That doesn't math doesn't match. I get it. But if you go back and watch one of his interceptions, I believe it hits the receiver right in the chest, bounces off him, and it's an interception. It's one of those where it's like, okay, well, you can't ask the quarterback to do anything differently. It's not his fault. Now, it goes down as an interception, but it's not his fault. So I'm going to clarify that now. That this Penn State offense has only turned the ball over 6 times in 7 Big Ten games. That's tied with Minnesota for the second fewest in the conference. Now, you also have to know where number 44 is at all times. He's the likely Mackey Award winner this year in all of college football, Tyler Warren. He leads all Power 4 tight ends in receptions with 67, receiving yards with 808, and he's third in all of the Big Ten in receptions and receiving yards as well. They will flex him out. They will put him in the slot. They will line him up as a traditional wide tight end. You'll see him as a wildcat quarterback, of which, by the way, he's got 4 rushing touchdowns and over 100 rushing yards in his last 3 games combined. He is among the most versatile players you will see in college football this season. So limiting him, I would say stopping him, but let's be realistic here. Limiting him has to be a priority for Corey Heatherman. But why I would say going double-digit plays to make Penn State going on the field is so important is because they scored 49 points last week against the 19th place team in the Big Ten. Peace and love. I understand there's 18 teams in the Big Ten. Purdue is in 19th place to me. They are that bad. But the 49 points they scored last week, Penn State, they had one scoring drive of 10 plays or more.
Just the 19th ranked team just about beat Illinois too. Like, how you came up with the 19th ranked team bit? Like, seriously.
They have played one good half of football all season long. And to your point, they probably should have beaten Illinois.
Yeah.
But in every other game, they have been so dreadful. Like, dreadful upon dreadful. Just I don't understand how Ryan Walter still has a job, to be quite honest with you. Like, they have been, I mean, they got beat by 59 points by Notre Dame. They lost by 3 touchdowns to Oregon State. Nebraska beat them by 3 touchdowns. Wisconsin beat them by like 40. They've played a couple of overtime games, yeah, against Illinois and Northwestern. But I know the schedule is not kind to them. They stink. Like, they are clearly the worst team in the Big Ten. Clearly the worst team in the Big Ten.
Between they're the 19th ranked team bit, like, I don't know why that struck me so funny. Between that and calling USC Beach Purdue, I don't know what's funnier this year.
Look at you.
The Beach, whoever that was that came up with Beach Purdue for USC, that was just hilarious. I cannot stop laughing at that.
That's so rude, man. I mean, I'm not telling you it's wrong.
I'm not telling you it's wrong or right. I just thought it was funny. Okay, sorry. I totally derailed your keys to the game, but I thought that. No, I thought the 19th.
I'll hop back in. Trust me, I'm the one that usually diverts this discussions into some random tangent. So, double digit plays. Why is that important? I'm so glad you asked. Because there's more opportunities to have in a college football drive result in a mistake. Could be a turnover, could be a gigantic negative play that sets them back for a field goal instead of a touchdown. Now, we are talking about a defense for Minnesota that has been incredibly opportunistic all season long. They have a Big Ten leading 20 takeaways, but forcing multiple in this game has to happen. Another part of why Minnesota was able to complete the upset back in 19, they had 3 turnovers. You had 2 picks by Antoine Winfield, and then the Jordan Howden one to end it. You've got to be able to force multiple turnovers here. Now, the biggest mismatch potentially of this entire game is Penn State's third down offense against Minnesota's third down defense. The Nittany Lions are converting 52% of their third downs, which is insane. It's top 5 in the country. Why are they so good there? I talked about it earlier. Their average third down distance to go on third down is 5.6 yards, which ranks 2nd in all of college football. Now, you compare that to Minnesota's defense. They are 15th in the Big Ten on third down. That's not where you want to be coming into this game, and they're allowing 43.8% of third downs to be converted against them. So where's the optimism? Well, the optimism would be this. Minnesota's defensive line has to figure it out. They looked worn down against Rutgers, which – I don't know, might happen when you only play 5 defensive linemen, 20 or more snaps in every game. But what do I know? I have an entire offseason to complain about something. They've now coming off a week where Ja Joyner, Devin Eastern, Jalen Logan Redding, Danny Strigow, Anthony Smith. They're all playing through bumps and bruises. They've got an extra week to rest their legs, rest their ailments. And now you got to come out with everything you got in this final home game. If you can get pressure with four, which I'm not here to tell you, I think the world of Penn State's offensive line, I think they're maybe slightly above average in the Big Ten. They're not anything to me to write home about. So if you can get pressure with four, or heaven forbid, limit the run game, that changes a lot here. But if you can't, and Heatherman has to get more aggressive, which means blitzing five or six, that means man coverage everywhere else, where one missed tackle leads to explosives, which leads to points. So here's the recipe. You got to limit Tyler Warren's explosive plays. You have to try and get Penn State out of third and shorts. And then you also have to get multiple turnovers so that your devastating passing down package can get on the field. Now, finally, it is senior day after all, Luke. And that's where it's the final home game for guys like Max Brosmer, Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, Tyler Cooper, Ariante Ursary, Quinn Carroll, Danny Strigow, Ja Joyner, Justin Wally, Ethan Robinson, among others. I know I'm forgetting a few. Dragon Kesich.
Mark Crawford.
I would just say this. Yeah, Mark Crawford. So my final key is this. See if you can't capture a little bit of that senior day magic, because everybody here listening knows Luke Buehr is the captain of the narrative street ship. And he would tell you the last time a number four team in Penn State came to town, Huntington Bank Stadium was rocking, and those loyal fans were rewarded with a win. Now, 5 years later, very different teams on both sides. But I'll say this. This 2024 Minnesota team has shown that they can play with anyone, anyone on the schedule, but can they put it together for 60 minutes? Because that's what it's going to take to be the top five team in the country. So there's going to be a little bit extra emotion for all these seniors. Your seniors need to be stars. Luckily, they're your best players as well. Minnesota has only played one home game since October the 6th. I will remind you that when this game is played, it will be November the 23rd. So it's been a long time. This home crowd hasn't seen this team in quite a bit. They've been fantastic all season. They've got one last chance to send these seniors out that have done so much for the program. So if they can get off to a fast start, I mean, this thing could go from anywhere, because I'm not here to tell you that. I think, Luke, that if Minnesota does pull the upset, in which we can start to talk about predictions here, I think Penn State probably misses the playoff. Because you look at their wins right now, they're 9-1, number four team in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, who's their best win? It's probably Illinois. But look at the other teams that they've beat. I don't know that they've really faced anybody above 500.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is going to always be the interesting thing in the playoff, in this what we're calling the new playoff era, right? You know, they're preseason, their schedule didn't look that bad, like on paper, but it has turned out to be not a great schedule. You know, Illinois is probably by far their best win. USC would have been kind of a hallmark one, but they haven't been what everybody expected. Wisconsin hasn't been great either. Yeah, it's not a great schedule.
Yeah. It's like the same argument I would make for Texas.
Yep.
Like if Texas ends up 10-2. I think they shouldn't be in the playoff, because who's Texas's best win? Vanderbilt at that point?
Maybe, yeah.
Like Texas is also 9-1. They've got an opportunity to certainly help themselves by beating Texas A&M on that final Saturday of the year. But if they lose that game, like truly, who is their best win? It's probably Vanderbilt. And at that point, it's like, okay, now we're splitting hairs. You can probably find a better team to put in there. And then we get into the whole semantics of, well, but Texas's roster, look at all the NFL talent. Well, that's why we play the games. I mean, Now I'm getting off to a tangent, but like winning games should matter, which leads into the whole Indiana kerfuffle thing, where if Indiana does indeed lose to Ohio State on Saturday, and that's their only loss, I truly believe they should still be in the playoff if some of these different teams like Penn State, like Texas, end up losing another game yet, the game should still matter. And I know what the Vegas spreads would be, but my goodness, Have we never seen a college football upset before in our lives, especially in this season where seemingly every team is as close to one another as we've seen in years?
Yeah.
I'll get off my soapbox here. So let's see if they can't capture a little senior day of magic and dinky.
All right. Let's have you predict first this time. I think too often I predict first. I'll give you the floor this time. Oh, by the way, I should get to our stats. Neither of us are very good at this. Ryan is 7-3 overall, 3-6 against the over under, and 4-6 against the spread. I'm a putrid 5-4 overall. I am 3-6 against the over under, and I'm 2-8 against the spread. Just, you know, fade all my spread picks.
Fade Luke Buehr is what you're telling me.
Yeah, fade it.
So. All right, so let's start as we always do with the maroon and gold color scenario. In that scenario, Minnesota finds a way to turn over the least turnover-prone quarterback in the Big Ten at least twice. Their offense is able to capitalize on likely short fields with touchdowns. Darius Taylor's got a pep in his step again, and Dragon Kesich nails 3 field goals. And in this world, in this scenario, in this glass-half-full place, a late jaw joiner sack on fourth down forces a turnover on downs. They dash Penn State's college football playoff dreams. The Gophers win 23-21. Now, in Johnny Raincloud scenario, Penn State comes out on a heater. They continue that. They get a couple of explosive play touchdowns early to take the crowd out, and that allows their NFL pass rushers to pin their ears back against a struggling offensive line. Minnesota gets handled. They lose 34-10 in a laugher. Now, as I always tell you, reality is somewhere in between. So I'll say this. Until I can see Minnesota's offensive line and defensive line playing to their capabilities, and at some point, maybe it's not their capabilities because we've seen 10 games of this, and maybe we had too high of expectations for them. But until I see them perform at their best for 60 minutes, a complete game, I have a hard time believing Flex team can pull off the upset. I think it's close into the fourth quarter, but a late Tyler Warren touchdown puts him up 2 scores. I will say Penn State. See, this is where I wish I knew what you were picking so I could fade it. So
I think this has been an advantage to you, honestly. So
no, I'm going to change. We'll see what I write on Friday morning. But as we sit here late Wednesday night, I will say Penn State, you said the spread's 12?
It's 12.5 for Minnesota, 45.5 over under. Or sorry, 12.5 for Penn State. My bad. Just misspoke.
All right. I will say Penn State 24, Minnesota 13. That's a Minnesota cover and an under. I think an under is pretty likely in this game, unless Penn State gets explosive and gets to like 34 points, which, trust me, I'm well aware of their schedule. They're liable to do that. I would just say an offense that can score more than 17 points against Penn State looks unlikely right now. But Luke, fade my picks. What do you say?
Okay. Yeah. So I had 31-17 Penn State, which obviously would be a Penn State cover, and would be an over. So again, you know, fade my picks. It's totally fine. I don't do this professionally. But I wanted to call out a couple things. If Minnesota is going to have a chance here, Penn State, they're a fairly disciplined team, but from a penalty yardage perspective, they're 11th in the conference. In the games that they've struggled, they have had higher number of penalties. You think back to that Bowling Green game. All in all, I think this is a very good team, but you have to jump on them early. They seem to get better as the game goes along. And you know, this defense for them is very good. I just don't see a scenario that I can feel confident picking where Minnesota is able to pull this out. I'd love to see that happen. There'd be nothing greater than that. I just have one just kind of general comment before we talk about the Big Ten games, Ryan, is, you know, oftentimes people come into these situations and if the Gophers lose and it's a close game, you know, there's just like mad frustration. Just remember that the fact that the fact that you get to go to a game where you're playing and you might play the top four team in the country really tough, that can also be fun even if you lose. I know that it's frustrating to lose and everything, but I remember when we didn't even have a chance, right, Ryan? And I think that's something I will always be thankful of in this PJ Fleck era. I know there have been really frustrating moments, but the guy performs better as an underdog. And this is one of those underdog situations. Maybe they don't pull it out. Maybe they do. But if they do find a way, if they do find a way to pull it out, you know, get on the field and, you know, party like it's 1999. But if they lose and it's close, man, enjoy the journey, because the journey is the juice. So I'll part with that. Otherwise, let's take a real quick stroll through a very interesting week in the Big Ten, Ryan. Purdue travels to Michigan State. The 19th best team in the Big Ten is a 13.5
you like that one.
Is a 13.5 point underdog with a 47.5 over under. I think Joe Rossi and crew get it done.
Yeah, this is the least interesting of the games, just because I have no faith in Purdue. I wouldn't say that, you know, this is a game Michigan State needs to have to be able to potentially get to the Quick Lane Bowl, where they've got Purdue this week and then they host Rutgers at home to end, which Rutgers is now playing well. We'll get to them a little bit later. But this is one they need to have to be able to continue. The question I have for you, Luke Buehr, which Aiden Chiles shows up in this game?
Aiden Chiles, no doubt.
Aiden Chiles. You need to trademark that, put that on a t-shirt. But yes, I agree, Joe Rossi's part role.
All right. That game is on Fox on Friday night at 7 p.m. Number five, Indiana travels to number two, Ohio State. The big noon kickoff on Fox. Ohio State is a 13.5 point favorite. The over-under is 51.5. I don't know, man. I guess I understand the spread, but it also feels minorly insulting to Indiana. I know that Indiana's had a pretty cush schedule. Kudos to you, Daniel House, regular contributor to the pod when Derek hasn't been able to join us. But I'm telling you, man, that just feels a little bit like they're shading them.
Especially with Ohio State losing their starting center to a torn Achilles.
Oh, really?
Their left tackle.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, but I ain't here one to tell you, like, this isn't like Minnesota going down with their center and left tackle. You're just going to plug in another four or five star in there. Yeah. They may be more inexperienced, but that's where I am curious to see if Indiana is going to have a shot in this game. They're going to have to be able to shut down the running game, get pressure on Will Howard. I think there's a decent chance. Now, we also get into the whole, where do you stand on the big noon Ohio State conspiracy? It's not even a conspiracy at this point.
What's the
Ohio State game seemingly is at 11 a.m. for whatever reason.
Oh. Yeah, well, it's a TV time slot thing, right? Like, I understand they're by far the biggest draw in the Big Ten. Maybe the next biggest draw is Michigan, right?
Do you think Gus Johnson is tired of
Columbus?
State? I'm just looking at this, by the way. So they're on Big Noon on Fox in five of their final six games of the season, including this one this weekend. Then they've obviously got the big game next weekend when Michigan comes to town.
Yeah, do you think Klatt and Gus Johnson actually just get a check from Ohio State?
Golly. Yeah, that is...
From the Learfield equivalent for them? Like,
yeah. Oh, man. Yeah,
okay.
That's tough. I would say I do think Ohio State wins.
Yeah.
But I just miss me with the whole thing of, well, Indiana needs to keep it close. If they're going to be in the college football playoffs, stop it.
Okay.
Again, stop it.
Illinois, ranked number 25, travels to Rutgers. They are a 1-point favorite, 47.5 over under. One could argue that this might be the most interesting game. Like, this would be the next best Big Ten game of the week. I know that the Minnesota Penn State game is slotted in a better time slot. For me, this is probably the most interesting game.
I think it's interesting for a few different reasons. I would say Athens coming in off probably his best game of the season, of which he completed, I think, a season high 66% of his throws.
Okay.
Go ahead.
He played one good half, but yes. Oh, wait.
Okay.
They played a game since Minnesota.
They played against Maryland, who's not a good team.
But everybody's feasted on Maryland. So, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what he looks like in this one because it's 11 a.m. in Piscataway, which is somebody who just watched live from Piscataway an 11 a.m. game. It's a late arriving crowd, I'll say. Give those Scarlet Knight fans a little bit of grace, but they're playing well off the bye. They got Manungai back last week. Illinois took care of business as well. Again, I think this is one that we're going to be fighting to have on in the press box as we prepare for Penn State and the for the Gopher football media. But I am very curious to see, can Illinois knock Ethan Kaliak-Manis around early? And if so, I think they're going to win this game by probably 7 to 10 points. But if Manungai can establish the run, if they can get Ethan in rhythm, we know how that goes.
You all better hope they have Peacock in the old press box there. Iowa travels to Maryland for an 11 a.m. kick on BTN. Iowa's a 6.5-point favorite. The over-under is 45.5.
So have you seen the news this week about who is starting a quarterback for Iowa?
No, but I sort of think that they go back to Cade McNamara. Maybe they can, because it's against Maryland and they're going to throw a little bit.
It doesn't sound like Cade McNamara is going to be ready, which means they are going to be on quarterback 3 or 4 and something called Jackson Stratton, who transferred in the offseason from Colorado State, of which prior to that, in his Colorado State tenure, he was 4 of 17 with 2 picks and a touchdown.
Okay.
I don't know what to think, considering Brennan Sullivan's out for the rest of the regular season. Cade McNamara, I thought he was in the concussion protocol, but sounds like he might still be in it, which is scary for him. And I hope
It is,
I might be misremembering this. Or
I just assumed that he was going to play. I don't have any insight in.
Parents said today they are preparing as if Jackson Stratton is going to be the starter. So if Maryland and your guy Billy Edwards can get a little bit of home momentum early, which forces Jackson Stratton to be able to throw the football 25 times, that is the worst case scenario for Tim Lester. Now, if you can just ride Caleb Johnson into the ground, that's where you would want to be. I think they're going to try to do that against not a good Maryland team. Your boy, Mike Locksley, has lost 5 of his last 6 games.
Yeah.
So there's a recipe for this to happen, and that's where the spread is less than a touchdown. But Maryland has got to force something called Jackson Stratton to throw the football.
All right, Northwestern travels to Michigan. Michigan needs this game to get to bowl eligibility ahead of Ohio State. This is a 2:30 kick on FS1. Michigan is a 10.5-point favorite, a 36.5 over-under. Northwestern also needs this game to be able to get bowl eligible. They have to win this one and against Illinois. I guess academically they could qualify much like the Gophers did last year at 5-7. But they need this one. But for Michigan, this is a huge game.
If Michigan loses this game, does Michigan have a new head coach next year?
Did he sign his contract ever?
Sharon Moore did, but I would say this. I mean, if they lose this game, they're not beating Ohio State next week. No. I understand rivalry games are weird.
I don't think they win no matter what. But
if Michigan loses this weekend to Northwestern in the Big House, do they have a new head coach next year?
I think they might have a new head coach regardless. It wouldn't surprise me if they're able to piece together cause to fire him, right?
Yeah, we'll see what happens with the NCAA investigation and everything. But this is one Michigan has to have. I mean, you absolutely have to have it. And you know Northwestern is going to be scrappy. Mm-hmm. The same Northwestern team that they have always been. I think Michigan wins. I think it's disgusting. I think it's like a 23-13 game, if that. But this is one Sharon Moore needs. And if he doesn't get it, I think the whispers start to become louder and louder as we're just 2 weeks until National Signing Day.
All right. I know your favorite game of the week is what we're going to
preview. Let's go, baby.
Wisconsin at Nebraska. Both teams 5-5. Something's got to give. One of these teams, both have basically been in free fall. This is a 2:30 game on BTN. Nebraska's a 2.5-point favorite, which really surprised me. I still thought Wisconsin would be a favorite. 42.5 over under. Nebraska trying to end the longest Power Four bowl streak in all of college football, I guess. And then Wisconsin, having been in free fall of late, was trying to get back on track and get to bowl eligibility.
I asked you this, I think, in the pre-production meeting, but is this the most, I would say, desperate game that is going to be played in the Big Ten all season?
I thought about that a little bit more. I actually think that maybe the USC-UCLA game might be more desperate. Because USC needs this game, they need this game to be able to become bowl eligible. I got to look at their schedule here.
So you don't think USC is going to pull the upset on Notre Dame, is what you're telling me?
Well, I think it's exceedingly unlikely, yeah. So, like, they need that one to get to bowl eligibility. That would not look good for the Brisket King himself. And
is he related? Is he the second cousin of the Tiger King, or is it not related?
He is the Brisket Photo King. But then UCLA, if they can win this game, they got Fresno State to close out the season. That could be a sneaky way, and they could be one of the more impressive teams, probably, given their schedule and what they were able to accomplish in year one. So I don't know. I think that USC-UCLA game might be more desperate.
All right. Well, let's stick with the USC-UCLA one, and we'll end with the Wisconsin-Nebraska one. Because to your point, I mean, this is the highest, I think it's the highest dollar ticket to get into.
Yeah.
It's played at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. $150 to get in the door for the crosstown rivals. I mean, this is one where, let's live in the world, because USC is only a slight favorite. They're a 4.5-point favorite.
Yep. 51.5 over under.
Every single game is the same for USC right now. It's a one-score game. Same thing with UCLA. Say your boy Deshaun Foster pulls the upset. Is Lincoln Riley the head coach at USC next year?
I don't know. Like, I don't know his buyout situation. I just don't think that
I don't think he would get fired. I think he would leave to, say, hypothetically, if you want to have me put on my tinfoil hat.
Okay.
Become the offensive coordinator for whoever the head coach is of the Chicago Bears, where he then would re-team up with Caleb Williams. He made it look so good into convincing the NFL to take him at the number one overall selection.
Okay. That's interesting. I think that I could believe more than he gets fired, because I just don't think that athletic departments, regardless of their status, are trying to take on a bunch more capital they have to pay out, right? They want to clean up as much of their balance sheet as possible.
Well, that's where, again, stop me if you've heard this before. I think a former USC coach who has now convinced an NFL team that he was worthy of an offensive coordinator. If you don't know who I'm talking about, Cliff Kingsbury was a senior offensive analyst at USC last season.
Yeah.
Is able to somehow finagle his way into an NFL OC job with the Washington Commanders, and he and Jaden Daniels have looked pretty good.
Yeah.
So with that being the track record, if he wants to get out, and I'm talking if Lincoln Riley wants to walk away from a lot of money at USC, I think there'll probably be an opportunity for him to potentially coordinate whoever is going to be in charge of the Chicago Bears. Something to keep an eye on, but
interesting.
I think USC does win this game, though. I think UCLA finally doesn't get away with it with their stupid unforced errors, whether it's penalties, whether it's just dumb things. And I think that USC does actually put it together.
Okay. Wisconsin-Nebraska, 2:30 BTN. Again, Nebraska, 2.5-point favorite, 42.5 over-under. Who do you got?
I think it is interesting, though. With whether you think it's Wisconsin, Nebraska, whether you think it's USC, UCLA, which game is more desperate, all of those teams need this win. You're talking about a Wisconsin team that was 5-2 has now fired Phil Longo, which, what was your favorite Dairy Raid moment?
The Dairy Raid name itself.
And then Luke Fickell, when somebody asks him from the media who's calling the plays, saying, why should I tell you? It just gives you someone to point the finger at. Well, if it doesn't matter, Fickell, then why'd you fire him? If it doesn't matter who's calling the bleep.
He didn't think about that response.
He's such a... I'll call him a banana head.
Can we... Okay, sorry. I know that we've kind of gotten a lot of tangents, and this is probably our longest preview in some time. Why did he go to kind of an air raid offense after basically running a pro-style scheme at Cincy?
Luke, you were the... Luke Fickell isn't going to work at Wisconsin truther, so you tell me.
Well, no, I wasn't the truther. I
you said he was not going to work.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, I just said it, I didn't... My skepticism was more rooted in the fact that they were making stylistic changes that weren't consistent with Wisconsin, and that kind of turnaround, I think, just takes more time. I don't think his athletic director set him up for a lot of success either. You know, talking about competing for national championships, right? And they got rid of the Wisconsin guy. Like, you know, his name's escaping me at the moment.
My boy Jim Leonard, of which I go to sleep every night with my life-size pillow.
But even before Jim Leonard, what was his name?
Paul Christ?
Yeah, Paul Christ. He was the Wisconsin guy. I don't know.
Well, you got Wisconsin trying to get back to their glory of the 2000s. You've got Nebraska trying to get back to their heyday in the 90s.
Yeah.
Of which I'll steal that thought from our group chat, not give anybody any type of credit for it.
Right.
But...
We're just trying
Wisconsin
to
5-2 in the free fall.
Yeah.
They need this game to get to a bowl because they got Minnesota coming to town next week. Are they certainly liable to win that game? Absolutely. But this one looks a lot more winnable to me because you've got a Nebraska team that can't win a bleeping game in the month of November. I believe the stat that I've seen going around the Twitter machine is that Nebraska has not won a home game with fans in the stands in November since 2018, which if that is true, is truly incomprehensible to me about how awful that team has been for some time in November specifically.
So we're in 2024. I imagine you can assume you maybe get two home games per year.
Yep.
Huh.
That's like 0-9-ish.
That's like 0-9 or 0-10. Like that's incredible.
They need this one because next week on Black Friday, Nebraska has to go to Iowa City and take on the Iowa Hawkeyes. Now, they're both 5-5. Neither team has won a game in like a month. Like, they are going to be scratch, claw, physical. Now, I do think Wisconsin ends up winning this game because I trust their run game more. Sure. I think whoever is calling the plays for the Badgers is just going to ground and pound this thing to death because they're tired of watching Braden Locke make two throws a game that are just truly sinkable for an entire team. But if Nebraska shows up at home here and forces Braden Locke to throw it, there's your recipe. So let me tell you, I wish this game was at 6 on BTN. So when I get done writing from the press box, I can turn it on in the second half. But I think this is going to be as physical of a game as you will see all season because the desperation from Luke Fickell's staff, from Matt Rule's staff, they know that if they want to get to whatever bowl game it is, this is the most likely opportunity left on both of their schedules.
All right. Well, it is an interesting week of football, and there's still one left after this. And then we're going to get into our first iteration of the college football playoff with 12 teams. What a time to be alive, Ryan Burns. We are so fortunate.
Somehow we've only got a couple weeks left of the regular season here, which it just feels like yesterday we were starting to preview that North Carolina game. So I hope everybody who does head out to the game this weekend, bundle up. And just try to send these seniors out the right way because guys like Daniel Jackson, Dragon Kessage, Ariante Ursary, among many others, they're going to be some of the best players you'll watch in a Gopher uniform in some time.
All right. Yeah. And obviously check out Ryan's work on Gopher Illustrated. It's some really great stuff. And this is the season to be checking it out because recruiting is, you know, going to be
2 weeks from National Signing Day because National Signing Day is as early as it's ever been with the recruiting calendar change. So, yeah, I will say this. We're going to have some deals coming around, I think, next week. So if you've been wanting to get in at a reduced rate. I would tell you, wait a week. I'll be transparent. I'll be honest with you. If you guys can do the same for me next week when we get some Black Friday sales in, that'd be much appreciated.
All right. We want to thank Homefield Apparel, the Burns Insurance Agency, and Team Dinkytown Real Estate for making this episode possible. Again, thank you for listening. It's always fun to do this. And if you stuck with us all the way to here, congratulations. You win some sort of credit. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.